Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And I want to thank you all for tuning in. So today on The Voice of Yoga, we'll be talking about duality as a divided consciousness. In this show, we will be discussing the physics of spirituality. We can't get figs from thistle. Listen as we explore the various modes of thinking and how they work. In the final analysis, we must know ourselves as we are known by the one power of the universe. Sickness and evil are a belief in something other than the divine law of life. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and experience unity consciousness. So Swami, let's just talk about the title of the program, Overcoming Duality, a Belief in Two Powers. So let's explain duality, and then we can talk about the two powers.
Yeah, in order to understand duality, we've been using what we call the principle of manifestation. That in order for something to manifest, to appear, it must split from unity. It must split from the absolute. It manifests in half and then leaves behind a complementary unmanifested other part. And that is what sets up the Trinity, which is typically used in a lot of spiritual theology. And when you're looking at the human experience, one of the things that we refer to is that we make shifts in consciousness every day. We go from waking state to dream state to dreamless state back to waking state. And we have experiences with two of those shifts in consciousness. When consciousness is in your waking state, we have recollection from our experience because the things that are appearing before us are basically in half. Because they're in half, there's contrast. There's a point of departure, and our senses work on contrast. And same is true when we're dreaming or when we fall asleep and we have a dream. We move into the complementary unmanifested other part of that equation. And we have recollection from our experience with that dimension because it is in half. There's contrast once again. But the sleep from which we return, where we have no recollection, that's when consciousness returns to the absolute, when it returns to unity. And we have no recollection from our experience with that dimension because the causal spiritual dimension is whole, it's complete, and there's no contrast. So there's no report in our senses. And that's very helpful in trying to understand the difference between what we call duality and what we call spirit.
So now, let's talk about the two powers. Our listeners may have some new listeners that may not understand what we're talking about.
Well, the law of opposites, the principle of manifestation, brings into effect the law of opposites, that you can't have one without the other. So in other words, you can't have good without bad. So if good appears, the complementary unmanifested bad part goes underground, and it is not visible, but it is tangible. because for every action, there is an equal and an opposite reaction. So with regard to starting to understand the concept of two powers and the belief in duality, and even starting to understand that anything that reports in our five-sense mind is a belief in something other than the truth of our being, is or has been for me personally a revelation.
So, well, let's talk about, so to overcome duality, what is it that we need to think about? What is it that we need to do?
Well, I think the key here is to follow the scripture, know the truth, and it is the truth that will make us free. And the truth is that there is but one God. There is one power in this universe. And the more that we know that, then the easier it is for us to get out from underneath the hypnotism that comes with the belief in the two powers. Because we think the things that are visible and tangible and the things that are invisible and tangible are real. But these are the things that come out of the unified state. These are the things that come out of the one power that is the principle of this universe. And it makes anything other than the one power a concept or a belief, but it is not a reality.
So when we're talking about the physics of spirituality, we need to first know who we are, who we really are, before we can understand the physics of spirituality?
Well, yeah, the physics of spirituality is what we call like attracts like. And like in the Bible, it says, ask in my name and it shall be given to you. And the interpretation that we use, what is really meant by the phrase, my name, is my likeness. That if we assume our spiritual identity, our spiritual selfhood, then we are in a position to communicate with the divine. But if we acknowledge or we identify with ourselves as matter or mind, then we will be in conflict with that. There will be no synergy between us and spirit. And so, assuming our spiritual identity is what opens up the channel of communication between you and your divinity.
Oh, I see. So it's that, being able to access that, we get there through how we think.
Right. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about is that, And I really like in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, Mary Baker Eddy makes reference to three modes of mortal thought. Having more of a yoga background and using the spiritual science of Kriya Yoga more as the template, when I read that in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, it immediately referred me to the diagram that we use for the logo that we call universal consciousness. It is the image of an individual that has the seven chakras and the personal planets that are associated with those seven chakras in correspondence with the zodiacal signs that they rule. And so for me to look at the modes of thinking, I refer to the mutable signs of the zodiac, starting with Gemini, which is referred to as the lower mind. And so one of the barriers to us understanding ourselves spiritually is to get lost in instinct, appetite, preservation, and survival. And then moving on to Virgo, human intelligence, just the testimony of our senses, perception, reason, memory, intuition. These are all things that even though they have function in the human experience, they become a barrier to us unlocking our real potential as experiencing the perfection of our own being. And so Virgo is really when we are accepting human intelligence. The next octave is Sagittarius, which is what we refer to as the higher mind. And the higher mind really in this model translates into the collective consciousness. And it is a compilation of human theories, beliefs, and concepts that have actually become a huge barrier to us accepting our spiritual selfhood. And then the correlation between Pisces and divine mind. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about in a lot of the shows here is that we must forsake human thinking for divine knowing. That divine mind does not think in halves. The divine mind does not acknowledge the presence of the aspects of reality that are apart from itself. And so divine mind speaks in the language of the absolute. It is pure wholeness. And it is also absolute goodness. So there's no real conflict in the realm of spirit. There's no competition. There's nothing lobbying for anything. That spirit is the changeless state of being. But it is the perfection of being. And so as we learn to overcome mortal mind and the different aspects and functions of it, then it kind of opens us up to be receptive to the presence of this divine law, which is the belief in one power.
You had mentioned the word barriers earlier, who got me to thinking that with all the explanations that you gave, that we could probably have barriers with all of those different modes of thinking.
Right. And that's, again, why Kriya Yoga is a path of action. It's a path of knowledge. It's a path of devotion. Because it's not just about doing, and it's not just about knowing, but it is that compilation, that coordination of knowing and doing, and bringing yourself to that experience of being spiritual. And that's really what the process in human development is all about. That's what apotheosis is all about. It's going from unconscious awareness to self-conscious awareness to superconscious awareness. And in this process, we are opening up and transcending the limits of this false sense of existence, this imitation of life that is kind of hijacked by physical form. And it is revealing to us that we are much more than just a separate entity.
I like that phrase, that being hijacked. I think that's a pretty good description as to, or maybe how we should think about our bodies, our true self in our body.
Right. And if we are more detached from it and more attached to the part of our makeup that is invisible and intangible, then that's how you start to usher in the like attracts like. And in the framework of developing a practice, you really eventually want to desire that which is invisible and intangible. Jesus called it to love the Lord thy God with your heart, your soul, and your mind, and all of your strength. That when we basically are attached and we desire the presence of this invisible, intangible source of sustenance, remember, that's a process. We have to refine ourselves. We have to go from the gross to the subtle, to eventually the sublime. And that's one of the things that I really like about the practice of yoga, is that it kind of gives you a breakdown of the strategies that you might want to start to enlist in order to create this hospitable environment to be able to usher in the revelation of the perfection of your being.
All right. Well, this is a great place to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments. Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, I want to talk about one line that we have in the summary, and that is, sickness and evil are a belief in something other than the divine law of life. So I think we need to talk about sickness and what is evil, and then let's recapture the divine law of life.
Yeah, that's quite a statement, I have to say. Well, sickness is any abnormal condition, anything that does not have the appearance of the perfection of being. And evil is actually an archery term, and it means anything that isn't the mark, because that's another term that we use in this model is the term sin. And of course, sin being missing the mark. And when you drill down with these terms, what we're referring to by missing the mark, we're saying we're mistaking the impermanent for the permanent. We're mistaking the finite for the infinite. We're mistaking the mortal for the immortal. And then these things, because they do not fall under the divine law of life, they really have no principle. They're not self-existent. They don't have any power of their own. And the only thing that really gives them the appearance of power is our belief in them. And that's one of the things that the more you start to understand how this works, you can really see how far off point we are collectively with our approach to life. And when we're talking about this, I'm talking about, say, for example, what goes on in the yoga community today with the preoccupation with the physical body, putting the emphasis on the physical body, the medical community, with all of their scientific research and discoveries and all of their rules and laws about early detection, is really fueled and supported by a belief in sickness. And it's also a violation for the first commandment. Because how can you believe in the allness of this indestructible principle called God and sickness or evil? Because it's either all God or it is an error, that it is a complete violation to the commandment.
So then you're saying that the phrase divine law of life would be me, for example, executing every day, every minute of every day with God as my pilot.
Right. That you would eventually identify with your spiritual sense of selfhood. That's a huge adjustment, because in order for us to accomplish that, we must lose a personal sense of self. And the way that that works is that the forces that are at work in the universe are, there's a creating force, there's a sustaining force, and there's a dissolving force. And the creating and the sustaining forces of the universe are found in the creating force is all the cardinal signs of the universe. And that's pretty much is how things start to come into form. That's how we initiate manifestation or the principle of manifestation. And then the sustaining forces are all the fixed signs of the universe. But the ones that are associated with the dissolving force of the universe are the mutable signs. And that's where everything culminates into the 12th sign of the zodiac, which is Pisces. And Pisces is the finished kingdom on Earth. And when you can start to drill down with this dissolving force and the function of the dissolving force and the recognition of the presence of it, we don't have to give up a personal sense of self. By us identifying with the presence of spirit, it does it for us. And again, by me assuming spiritual identity, it immediately dissolves the material sense of the experience.
Now, we've had similar conversations ourselves about this, and this is something that we have said before, is that we just can't think it. We have to actually believe it. Is that correct?
Yeah, and actually what I'm starting to learn is that we must be able to demonstrate divine law. That even thinking it or believing it, there's plenty of room for error in those two functions. That the demonstration of divine law really, and we've talked about this, we've made a difference between belief and faith. That we can believe in anything, but belief in truth is what faith translates into. And of course, the truth is that there is but one power in this universe, that there is only one divine law, and it is the law of life. And it is really our responsibility to acknowledge the presence of it, to activate it as a law in our experience, because we don't come in with that in place.
Well, I see from your notes that you have some information from Herb Fitch. Did you want to recite some of that for our listeners?
Yeah, I have something here from Herb Fitch with the revelation of St. John that he did. And I'll begin with this quote. For death is born of the belief that we are separate from life. If life and you are one, death is overcome, and life in you cannot be one while you are in a sense of mortal material form, nor can you fill that mortal material form with life. And so the awakening from mortal mind, materiality, mortality, and separation from God, all these are part of the crucifixion, releasing you from every idea, every belief, every concept, every form, every graven image in the mind that has persuaded you that the life of God is not your only being, until all beliefs in everything unlike God fall away and you stand revealed as the life of God. That's the end of the quote. And I found that to be very helpful for me to try and start to understand just the difference between the law of karma and the divine law of life. And also, it gives us a lot of help in understanding just exactly where we're living out from, because most of us are living out from the law of karma.
Yeah, and even that line that says, if life and you are one, death is overcome. And I think that's what you were saying earlier.
Right. And that's what Jesus demonstrated with his resurrection. And of course, the crucifixion of the body, symbolically, metaphorically, really is an essential part that we have to give up identity to what is provisional, what is mortal, what is finite, and we have to assume our identity as an eternal spiritual being.
And Swami, there's one line that you had read that I'm wondering if you can drill this down for us, and that is, nor can you fill that mortal material form with life, and the word life is with a capital L.
Yeah, that's a thing that I think a lot of us have a misconception that there's me and spirit is supporting my life. And what that does is it produces a me and something. And if there's me and, then there is a belief in two powers. And that's what creates this hypnotism, and that's what creates this cycle of death and rebirth. So once we start to get away from the simple fact that there is matter at all, other than the belief of something, that the only thing that is all is spirit. And what appears before us is not matter, but spirit appearing as whatever form or shape it takes. That's a very gentle shift in perception, but what that does is it holds you more to the science of how this really works.
And I see that we have one more quote that kind of follows suit as to what we've been talking about.
Yeah, the follow-up here that Herb Fitch continues with is, that is the life that is mine. That is the fact of being. I won't know it if I stand in a form. My soul knows it. Everything that I could possibly seek while I'm in the form is already mine while in the soul. And as I learn there is no form, lo and behold, I stand revealed in the kingdom of God now. All that the Father has is mine now. And the sense of form is part of the veil obscuring that truth. I don't attain the allness. I learn to drop the sense of form which denies the allness.
Wow. All right. That's pretty powerful. I think we're going to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, I invite you to visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com. And again, as we close the way down on that homepage, you'll see Swami Says recent posts, and you can access all the other Blog Talk Radio shows that are there for your continual learning experiences. Don't forget Swami's free webinar, Wednesdays at noon, also access from the website. Swami, do you have any other final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage everybody to start to overcome the belief in two powers and maybe start questioning why we are reacting so often as if we're in danger when we're not in any kind of danger at all. And with that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kiyola kind of day. Namaste.